Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Golden State, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be, on the internet and around the world, I am your host, Lauren Cartagena, and thank you again for joining us on another edition of Radio Pangea. Radio Pangea is a news outlet, real news stories for real people, no fake news here, because real people don't like fake things. It's one of our mottos. And thank you again for all of the kind words, gestures, notes, the things we've been getting in our email and on our Facebook page, facebook.com/radiopangea. Thank you very much for everyone who has been participating and enjoyed the ride thus far. We have been honored to bring you the news, and we will continue to do so throughout the remainder of this year and for however long as we can. Getting to the news today, heavy rains and flooding along rivers forced evacuations of thousands of people in California's winemaking region and an area of Nevada east of Lake Tahoe, with more storms on the way. Regions of California and Nevada, two states which have suffered from droughts for years, were walloped by storms over the past week from a weather system called the Pineapple Express that sent moisture streaming from Hawaii. The storms have knocked out power for more than 570,000 customers of Pacific Gas and Electric in Northern California and Central California, but electricity has been restored to almost half of them. The storm are the latest in the wet winter expected to put a considerable dent in California's years-long drought. Just north of San Francisco, rains caused the Russian River in Sonoma County to flood. Over the past week, storms have brought 10 to 15 inches of rain, or roughly 25 to 38 centimeters of rain and snow, to the Sierra Nevada Mountains in California, and lesser amounts of precipitation in western Nevada. A woman did die after she was struck by a fallen tree in the San Francisco Bay Area, with a local fire official saying the weather appears to have been caused a tree to topple over into her yard. Over the weekend, wineries in California's Napa Valley were spared damage from heavy rain, which is expected to replenish water supplies for the state's winemaking industry after 5 long years of drought. In a sign of the rain's intensity, California officials, for the first time in a decade, were considering opening floodgates at a weir on the California River to prevent flooding in areas of Sacramento. In all, 27 homes were damaged from flooding in Monterey County, just south of San Francisco, when the Carmel River breached its banks, swamping some nearby properties, and rainwater inundated homes in the town of Seaside. Also, an ancient giant sequoia tree with a hollowed-out long big tunnel enough for cars to drive through was toppled by floods in Calaveras Big Tree State Park, just southeast of Sacramento. The storms weakened early on Monday, but were expected to return in full force later in the day and last until the remainder of the week. California officials have not yet declared an end to the drought, since water still remains relatively scarce in the southern part of the state. But Northern California's Lake Oroville, the principal water reservoir for the state water project, has 2.25 million acre-feet of water, while just a year ago, at this time, it held about 1 million acre-feet of water. In other news today, amid pressure to build products at home, Apple is seeking to conduct high-tech manufacturing at one of its American plants. Apple has requested to make finished products in its facility in Mesa, Arizona, according to a document first reported by the Business Insider. Right now, it has permission to make consumer electronic components there. Mesa first announced the Apple manufacturing facility in 2013, when there were expected to be 2,000 jobs created. In 2015, Apple said it would invest $2 billion to expand a command center for the company's global network. Apple has recently reported to be looking into expanding cloud services to compete with rivals like Amazon and Google. The information was reported at the end of last year. However, meanwhile, President-elect Donald Trump has said, as president, he would create incentives to get Apple to build a big plant in the United States. In other news, a Volkswagen AG executive was arrested and charged as part of a U.S. investigation into the German auto giant's emission cheating scandal, with a federal complaint detailing how the company's top management conspired to hide the cheating from regulators. Oliver Schmidt, who was once in charge of ensuring that Volkswagen vehicles complied with U.S. emissions, was arrested by the Federal Bureau of Investigation at Miami International Airport as he prepared to fly home to Germany. He is suspected of conspiring to defraud the U.S. government and U.S. consumers to sell Volkswagen diesel vehicles. In one of the most dramatic scenes to unfold since Volkswagen admitted in September 2015 to installing illegal software on millions of vehicles to cheat emission tests, the portly executive stood forlorn, looking before a U.S. magistrate in Florida in handcuffs, shackles, and a tan jumpsuit. He was denied bail, pending another court appearance for fear that he could flee to Germany. The case against Mr. Schmidt shines new light on how Volkswagen managers who knew the company had rigged diesel-powered cars to cheat on emission tests for almost a decade in 2014 orchestrated a cover-up that involved dozens of employees, from ordinary engineers to the company's top ranks. The charges come as Volkswagen seeks to settle criminal allegations stemming from its admission in 2015 that it rigged nearly 600,000 diesel-powered cars sold in the United States to cheat on emissions tests. Volkswagen has agreed to pay up $17.5 billion in the U.S. to settle claims with regulators, consumers, dealers, and state attorney generals who could face another multi-billion dollar penalty in an expected criminal case. Mr. Schmidt appears to have become a central figure in the U.S. government's investigation as someone who allegedly played a key role in the company's efforts to conceal its use of illegal software, a so-called defeat device, in diesel vehicles sold in the U.S. The government's case against Mr. Schmidt centers on a period from April 2014 through the summer of 2015, when, as an executive in the United States and then in Germany, he allegedly helped orchestrate steps to mislead U.S. authorities after evidence of Volkswagen diesel fraud emerged. While serving as head of Volkswagen's Environmental and Engineering Office in Auburn Hills, Michigan, in April 2014, Mr. Schmidt learned of a report from the International Council for Clean Transportation and West Virginia University that showed two Volkswagen diesel vehicles produced higher levels of toxic nitrogen oxide during normal road use than on treadmill tests in the laboratory. Evidence against Mr. Schmidt includes testimony from two confidential witnesses, employees in Volkswagen's engine development group, and James Robert Liang, a Volkswagen engineer who pleaded guilty to conspiracy linked to the diesel scam in September. The FBI's witnesses agree to provide testimony in order to avoid prosecution in the U.S. Mr. Liang was involved in the diesel fraud from the early days. After nearly getting caught in 2013, Volkswagen engineers updated the illicit software. In September of 2013, Mr. Liang wrote an email to a colleague explaining the new update. The colleague replied that the test sequence sounded exciting, adding, "If this goes through without problems, the function is probably truly watertight." According to testimony from Mr. Liang and confidential witnesses, the FBI complaint says engineers in Volkswagen's engine development group form an ad hoc task force to formulate responses that aimed to prevent U.S. environmental authorities from discovering the defeat device and still appear to be cooperative. Mr. Schmidt became directly involved in the cover-up in the summer of 2015, when it was increasingly difficult for Volkswagen to conceal the defeat device, and engineers involved in the scheme were beginning to panic. in one email in June of 2015, cited in the government's indictment of Mr. Liang, a Volkswagen employee stressed the need to keep U.S. authorities from testing the company's earliest or Generation 1 diesel engines. If the Gen 1 goes onto the roller at the CARB, then we'll have nothing to laugh about. CARB refers to the California Air Resource Board. Mr. Schmidt and other Volkswagen employees informed attendees that U.S. regulators were not aware of the defeat device. The complaint says, rather than advocate for disclosure of the defeat device to U.S. regulators, VW executive management authorized its continued concealment. So all those cars that you thought were emission-friendly from Volkswagen turned out to be one big lie. In other news, getting to our Native American segment for the day. Family members said they were disappointed that the U.S. Supreme Court has declined to hear a case involving their former foster daughter, a girl with Native American ancestry who was ordered removed from their Santa Clarita, California home and reunited with relatives in Utah, Lexi, who was part Choctaw, was 6 years old when she was taken from her foster home in a tearful parting in March. She was placed with extended family in Utah under a decades-old federal law designed to keep Native American families together. A California appeals court in July affirmed a lower court's decision to remove the girl. Lexi was 17 months old when she was removed from the custody of her mother, who had drug abuse problems, and placed in a foster care program. Her father has a criminal history, according to other court records. Although foster care is supposed to be temporary, the Pages, the family that adopted her, wanted Lexi and for years fought efforts under the federal act to place the girl with relatives of her father, who is also part Choctaw. Lexi is now living with relatives of her father who are not Native Americans. The case was one of dozens brought by foster families since the Indian Child Welfare Act was passed in the late 1970s. Lawmakers found that Native American families were broken up at disproportionately high rates, and that cultural ignorance and biases within the child welfare system were largely to blame. Moving on to our Middle East news. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has vowed to retake an area that supplies Damascus with water and rejected any negotiations on his departure at upcoming talks in Kazakhstan. Now, we spoke about this the other day, that there are water suppliers that are trying to go into Damascus to set up the infrastructure, but they are currently at an impasse. Why? Because millions of people have been without water for weeks after fighting damaged key infrastructure in the Wadi Barada region outside Damascus that is the main water source for the capital. The government says former al-Qaeda affiliate Fatah al-Shalom Front, previously known as al-Nusra Front, is present in Wadi Barada and blames rebels there for cutting water to Damascus since December 22nd of last year. The role of the Syrian army is to liberate that area in order to prevent those terrorists from using that water in order to suffocate the capital, Assad said. President Assad's forces have been battling rebels in the Wadi Barada for weeks, and the fighting has continued despite the start on December 30th of a nationwide ceasefire brokered by Russia and Turkey. Assad has said that the ceasefire was being breached on a daily basis and mainly around Damascus because the territories occupied the main source of water are in Wadi Barada. He has also said more than 5 million civilians have been deprived of water for the last 3 weeks. The United Nations says 5.5 million people in or around Damascus are currently without water. Assad said that Fatah al-Sham is occupying the Wadi Barada region, 15 kilometers or roughly 10 miles northeast of the capital. But rebels deny that the jihadists are in the area and say that the water supply was severed after government strikes hitting pumping facilities. Assad also insisted that the ceasefire does not include Fatah al-Sham or its formidable rival, the Islamic State group. President Assad has said Syrian forces are on their way to victory after they recaptured the northern city of Aleppo on December 22nd with support from Moscow and Tehran. Since it started with the brutal repression of the anti-government protests in 2011, Syria has evolved into a complex civil war involving many players. Commandos from the U.S.-led coalition battling ISIS raided a village held by the jihadists in eastern Syria. The observatory and U.S.-backed Syrian Damascus forces say that at least 25 jihadists were killed in the two-hour raid on the village of Al-Kabar in the oil-rich province of Deir Ezzor. You're listening to Radio Pangea, and we will have more news when we return. With Radio Pangea. Want to say if you like what you hear, please follow us at facebook.com/Radio Pangea. That's spelled P-A-N-G-A-E-A. Facebook.com/Radio Pangea. Email us radiopangea@gmail.com, or you can also link to us on YouTube at youtube.com/Pangea Foundation. We're very excited to have our new listeners in Norway, in Ecuador, and in the United Kingdom. Thank you very much for making Radio Pangea your source for news and for allowing us into your listening space. Continuing with today's news, deep in Israel's Negev Desert, construction is well underway that will soon become the tallest solar tower in the world. Scheduled to be finished later this year at a cost of about $570 million, the Ashalom Tower will soar a staggering 820 feet into the sky. The tower is surrounded by more than 50,000 heliostat solar mirrors covering the area the size of 560 football fields. The mirrors reflect the sun's rays back onto the giant structure, heating water stored in a boiler at the top of the tower, turning it into steam. The steam then spins a turbine and generates energy. The tower will provide enough energy for 130,000 households, or about 5% of the country's population, according to Israel's Electric Authority. Israel has traditionally relied on fossil fuels for energy. Renewable resources currently account for just 2.5% of the country's electricity. The Ashalom Tower is part of a push to increase that mark to 10% by 2020. The tower, however, is not without its critics, who have planned the project and have commented that it's too expensive and complex to be replicated. The tower and its boilers are also designed to reduce costs, however. Everything is done to pursue profitability. The current tallest solar structure in the world is at the Ivanpah plant, located in California's Mojave Desert. It consists of three towers, standing 459 feet. Now, getting on to our other news for the day, and this is a story of love gone awry, fatal attraction, or maybe, just maybe, be careful when selecting a mate or that special someone that you think is going to be the one for you. And here's why. This is a breaking story. When officers arrived at Angela Diaz's condo last June in response to her 911 call, the police say they found her in tears with a ripped shirt and red marks on her neck. A man had just tried to rape her in her garage, she claimed. Anaheim police believe this was the gruesome result of a recent Craigslist ad in which someone had posted as Diaz and invited men to visit her condo to participate in her rape fantasy encounters, even if she screamed and fought back. Detectives became convinced the electronic trail led to her husband's ex-fiancée, Michelle Hadley, who soon faced 10 felony charges, and the possibility of life in prison. It was a bizarre enough case. It took an even stranger turn. Authorities say they were outright fooled. That's right. Hadley was exonerated, and the 31-year-old Diaz, accused of posing as a victim to frame Hadley, is behind bars. Miss Hadley is an innocent victim of a diabolical scheme, Orange County District Attorney Tony Rokakis said. Diaz, who is married to a U.S. Marshal, faces charges that include kidnapping, false imprisonment, and falsely reporting crimes. She was arrested last week in Phoenix, where she now lives, and is awaiting extradition to Orange County. Rokakis said he was not certain of Diaz's motive, but speculated that it involved a love triangle, and that the attempted frame-up may have been meant to put a dagger into the older relationship. Prosecutors officially dropped the charges against Hadley at a brief hearing at a courthouse in Fullerton, California. "You are free to go," Superior Judge Court Beatrice Gordon told her. Hadley wept, smiled, and embraced family members. She said she had been close to earning her MBA at Chapman University, and this whole incident put a little wrinkle in the plan, though she still hoped to graduate soon. "Nothing has ever stopped me before," she said. Prosecutors say Diaz sent emails to herself. using specialized software to make it appear that Hadley had sent them. And Diaz made false claims that Hadley had threatened her life and that of her unborn child. Along with attempting to frame Hadley, Diaz is accused of faking a pregnancy and cervical cancer, forging a check, posing as an attorney, and as two of her husband's ex-girlfriends, and just for good measure, also forging doctor's notes. Hadley was first arrested in June 2016 on the day Diaz reported the attempted rape. She posted bail, but was rearrested 3 weeks later after a 17-year-old boy appeared in Diaz's courtyard in response to the Craigslist ad. If they didn't act fast, the police feared it was a matter of time before Diaz was going to be raped and killed. Hadley was soon held on $1 million bail on charges that included attempted rape. Hadley spent 88 days in jail before she was released on her own recognizance after evidence accumulated of her innocence. Her lawyer, Mr. Gusty, said that he would not comment on whether his client intended to pursue a civil claim for being arrested. He knew from the start that she was innocent. As she awaited jail, she was expecting someone to say, "Okay, you're innocent, and we believe you now." Deputy Assistant District Attorney Richard Zimmer said there was no evidence that Diaz's husband was involved in the case. Zimmer said Angela Diaz used software to make it seem as if her emails were coming from Hadley's email account. He said that while Diaz gave an appearance of being an upper middle class professional, the investigation revealed her to be a serial con artist. Zimmer said the breakthrough in the case came in around September of last year, when investigators were able to uncover the real IP address behind the Craigslist ad and the harassing emails Diaz was receiving. Zimmer said he was sickened by the knowledge that an innocent woman had been arrested, and he has had more sleepless nights in the past 6 months than he's had in the past 40 years, because he says the last thing our office wants is to put innocent people in prison. And finally, if that wasn't bad enough, this is more of a light-hearted humor story, an odd news end piece for the day. And it goes like this. The owner of a weekly upstate New York newspaper says a man bought hundreds of copies in an unsuccessful effort to keep people from reading about his drunken driving arrest. That's right. State police arrested Joseph Talbot on December 29th in Wayne County and charged him with driving while intoxicated. Police also charged him with refusing to be fingerprinted or photographed. They say he told troopers he didn't want his mugshot in the paper. The 12,000 circulation Times of Wayne County says it obtained a mugshot from the county jail. It says it printed the mugshot on a story on the New Year's Eve and published them online. Newspaper owner and editor Ron Hardraker says Talbot bought nearly 1,000 newsstand copies at $1.25 each. And with that, you know now the news. Thank you very much for listening to Reno Pangea. We hope to catch you again on another edition. Until then, as always, please think for yourself. Thank you.